First of all, welcome you all here this afternoon. As you probably know, this meeting is going to go till 7:30 or till we pass this bill out. How about that? I do want to thank you, Representative. I do want to announce, in case you haven't heard, that we are going to meet this Saturday from 9 until 3. And that was Senator Farioli's idea. It had nothing to do with it. I should also announce, staff has a note here that we will no longer be meeting on Fridays because the full Ways and Means meets every Friday now, and probably will till session's over. And with that, I'd like to open the hearing for HB 3225 and ask Mr. Barely to come forward and give us some history.
Chair Messerly, for the record, my name is Ken Beerley. I'm the program manager of the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, and as you will be discussing over the next weeks, the allocation of resources to assist in watershed restoration around the state, I'd like to provide you with a little bit of background and history on the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board and some of these issues that we see from a program administration perspective. The history of the program goes back to 1986 during the interim when a number of interest groups and people affected by and involved in water use in Oregon got together to talk about how we can look at water management in a more holistic way, because at that time, and as we do have now, most of the agency programs were targeted to deal with fairly narrow issues. The Department of Environmental Quality addresses water quality. The Department of Water Resources addresses water quantity. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is interested in fisheries and wildlife. And there had not been a forum or a means for people to discuss broader interacting issues, and there had not been a way to engage the public, landowners, land managers in discussions on how they can look at their landscape in a more effective way. The notion was created by the 1987 legislature to establish a board that included representatives of both public and private interests across the landscape, and to create a forum where policy members from state boards and commissions sat on a board along with federal land managers and private agricultural technical advisors like the Natural Resource Conservation Service, the Soil and Water Conservation Commission, and the Oregon Department of Agriculture and Oregon State University Extension Service sat on one board and talked about common issues that affected Oregonians. The program was established to provide a small number of grants to assist individual landowners, soil and water conservation districts to assist in developing demonstration and education projects about watershed enhancement. And the program was funded variously from the general fund and from lottery dollars to the tune of $500,000 to $1 million a biennium over the last, between 1987 and 1990. What you have in this draft program summary is a bit of history. We tried to summarize the program for the last decade and also give us some indication of the specific type of projects that were funded during the 95-97 biennium. And then in the other handout, I've tried to summarize the program as it currently exists. And I think it's important to understand the changes that occurred between 1995 and the current time. In 1995, this was after the state had invested $10 million, half in the South Coast and half in the Grand Ronde Basin. The state legislature looked at ways in which we can deal with and address watershed councils, recognizing the importance of trying to local initiatives, local voluntary efforts throughout the state, and tie that into a state program. And the 1995 legislature passed House Bill 3441 that defined what watershed councils were and was very clear that these were local voluntary groups. It did not put the state in the role of recognizing, appointing, anointing, but it did put the state in the position of funding, providing funding as an opportunity for them, but also to provide funding for projects with technical merit. The program started out with, in 1995, again with about 25 or 30 watershed councils. We now have roughly 85, and the surface area of the state is nearly saturated, so we're coming to that leveling off point with the number of watershed councils. What we have seen as we deal with people around the state is a level of interest in having stakeholders from all interests in the basin together to try to figure out ways in which they can develop local solutions to local issues. And we have found that to be encouraging, both from engaging and enhancing local capability to solve problems, as well as a way of tying some form of public assistance to local communities so that it's meaningful to them because they're defining what their needs are. We're not defining for them what their needs are. The current program, as of last biennium, administered approximately $21 million. And we have some 350 active grants to local groups throughout the state. And the program has a staff of 7 people. Our primary responsibilities are to administer the fiscal management of the program, to administer the grants, provide troubleshooting for grantees, but also to coordinate with watershed councils. We have spent a good bit of time listening and learning from watershed councils, trying to provide them tools. We've put on a series of workshops for them, or actually have some going on the next month, and have developed some tools like under the Oregon Plan Water Quality Monitoring Guidelines, Watershed Assessment Manual, and other tools that local groups can use as they see fit. Another element that the program tries to provide is a way of coordinating agency assistance to local groups. Our staff that are located regionally spend a good deal of their time to bring public agencies to the assistance of local watershed groups. I've given you a lot of information. I'd like to be glad to answer any questions you have, but I think that there are a couple of things as you enter into these deliberations. One is that the local voluntary nature of watershed councils is extremely important. We need to keep that in mind. This is a very effective way for people who live in a place to express their care and concern about the place that they live in and their ability to make a difference. The other thing is that our observation has been that we need to make sure that we have the capacity to provide services to them through fiscal management, through tools, listening to them, and providing them tools that they ask for. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'd be glad to answer questions about the current program.
Thank you, Ken. Do we have any questions from the committee? Thank you very much for the overview. First, I'd like to call Jan Lee and Greg Miller. Where's your partner in crime?
That's right there.
He chickened out.
Mr. Chair, he should be here shortly. If he'd like, I could proceed with my part.
I'll catch him when he comes in.
Okay. I'm Jan Lee, Executive Director of the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which represents water suppliers statewide. And we've been working with a number of folks over the past few weeks trying to put together a proposal that met some of the needs that were identified by groups that we have been working with, both in the agriculture and other natural resource industries such as timber, and with some of the members of the Oregon Business Council as well. You'll see on our testimony that we have quite a range of folks involved, all the way from the Nature Conservancy and the Oregon Water Trust to Weyerhaeuser, the Small Woodlands, and all of the major agriculture groups. We started working from the platform of the OBC draft because when we started working, that was the one that we had. Subsequently, House Bill 3225, the Dash 2 amendments came out, and we've been working with a number of documents as the base tool since then. There are some important points that we would like to see incorporated into any bills that would come out of the committee. Basically, a process that builds from the bottom up that includes the voluntary watershed councils, that balances restoration with a healthy environment and a healthy economy, and that we commit to the intent of the Constitutional Amendment Ballot Measure 66. With that in mind, what we have done today is pulled out the sections of what we've been working on that fit into the sections you're taking testimony today on as part of House Bill 3225. And Mr. Miller was going to speak to that.
He just likes to watch you squirm, maybe.
Right. Well, we have a lot in common. My father retired from Weyerhaeuser, so.
Was your father always late, too?
He was the golfer, so he was always on time so he could get out on the green.
Hey, great.
I finished my testimony. Yeah, that's right. If there are any general questions that I could answer, I'd be glad to. I'll leave for Greg the discussion about the formation of the commission itself, but in regard to the other issues that you're reviewing today in the other three sections, that language would meet our needs as well, and so we will only be speaking to the organizational charts that we've prepared today. There's a portion that deals with funding in regard to who may apply for the loans, but we'd like to wait and speak to that when we have our entire funding package put together when you approach that the next time.
Do we have any questions of Jan while we're waiting on Mr. Weyerhaeuser?
Well, it's not unusual for people to get nervous, so I was in the restroom.
Mr. Chair, that's more information than we need.
I don't think we're going to go there, Greg.
For the record, my name is Greg Miller. I'm sure Jan effort as a chair of a work group, a natural resource work group, to work through a process, work through an organization that could get us to an endpoint with a lot of support from folks in the natural resource community, as well as proponents from Measure 66, as well as a variety of stakeholder groups. And what I'd like to do is share with you an organizational chart that may look a little busy, but I think you'll, once you get a chance to look at it, it's in your handout, but we'd like to use this in color and kind of walk you through and answer your questions. Now, that's real good, isn't it?
It is good.
Okay, we got that.
I was going to say, Greg, do you want to go out and try coming in again?
This is as good as Pat Amadeo's, if you recall. Pat, are you out here? We kind of view this as a GWEB Plus, Let me describe a little bit the theory behind this. What we went out and did our homework. We listened to both watershed councils and short soil water conservation districts. We heard what they were saying to us in terms of getting ground up influence in this effort to for salmon conservation, restoration, watershed enhancement, water quality improvements, and those kinds of things. When we stop to think about the structure that we have in place and taking the best parts of GWEP, listening to the folks on the ground what they would like to have in place as an organization, and keeping in mind that the Measure 66 says you have to, as a body, dedicate this money to an entity, whether it's an agency or a commission or an existing entity. So we started a little bit from scratch, pulled together the best pieces, and what we came up with was a 13-member Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission. We're still struggling over the name. There's probably some debate about that, but the reality is that we took, if I might, we took the existing commission members that represent the DPRs, ODS&W, Commission, Forestry, Water Resources, and Department of Agriculture, and placed those folks in this structure. We took folks from the SWCD and the Watershed Council, arena, and we also, and they're down there as members of their own watershed or council or their own district, and they are on the commission. How do they get there? They are governor appointed, and they are Senate confirmed, just like all the rest of our commissions and boards in the state. The difference in this situation is that the commission members, instead of being appointed by either the chair or a deputy, as it is under current GWEP, they would also have to go through this independent appointment process, just like the other folks that are coming from the ground up or from the district level. So that everybody has shot through that process and you get the best person on the commission.
Greg, can I stop you there for just a second? Have you folks given any thought to the organization chart above this level? In other words, the governor, are they, will they go through DAS and then down to this level?
It's our view that we are not, if you're talking about the dollars or about
just the organization.
It's our view that this is a new entity. That this is not an agency that we're creating, but a commission. And this is where the flow starts both at the work and the funding discussion. So there is no, and you have a scheme, I think, in your effort where you have an agency, DAS, or some other agency that you start at. This starts with this entity. Isn't that correct, Ken?
Yes, correct.
Well, I guess that's part of my question, but the other part is that all of these agencies and commissions at some point have to be tied to the organization chart and the CEO. So normally it comes from the governor, and then at some level they interrelate. The governor interrelates with the other boards and commissions, and then on down from there.
Let me describe to you the state and federal and IMST relationship. Let me describe to you the regional coordinator's relationship and then what this thing looks like out on the ground, and see if that really answered that question. Did you guys bring me a...
No.
I don't think you're going to take that long.
No, I've got four more minutes, right? In the typical GWEB, you have advisors or members of the GWEB that are state or federal agency folks. And what we did with those people was to put them at the table. Excuse me, I forgot a very important element. We also have two members that are non-voting that are members of the legislature. And they would be appointed by the Speaker of the House and by the Senate President. They're non-voting members. That comprises the complete structure of the organization. So there's legislators. The advisory staff kind of sits around the table, and they're comprised of existing federal or state policy advisors or policy people or technical people or whomever that you have been able to use in your GWEB system to provide that that component. New to this is an executive director. The old system, I think, that G. Weber staffed by the Natural Resource Advisor from the governor's office. Here we would have an executive director hired at the, by the commission itself, and there would be staffing for that executive director to work through the areas that the commission would begin to implement the Oregon, further the implementation of the Oregon plan, develop protocols and guidance at a statewide level for watershed councils and storm watershed districts and and that is kind of the essence of the organizational structure at that level. We break down into these regional coordinators. There are 19 basins out there, 17 of which have land masses that we have accounted for in these four basins over here, and these basins at this level. We would coordinate through a through five regional coordinators, and those basins are on a map. The regions are also on the map. Archaeologically divided.
Yes, it's the five regions of the state under, I think it's 536022, so that each of the five regions set up by the Water Resources Department in their statutes has either three or four basins in each one of the five, so they're pretty evenly distributed.
Excuse me, Greg, Representative King has a question.
I was wondering which area the Willamette would be in and who the description of the basins that they're in here.
Yes, that would be in the Willamette Basin. In fact, the Willamette Basin takes up much of the northwest region. We failed to bring you a map, I'm sorry, and we'll get one to the committee staff so that you would have a map of the breakup of the regions and basins.
So it would be northwest regions?
Yes, northwest regions. I believe in that particular region there's the Sandy, maybe the Clackamas. If someone is here from the Water Resources Department, they probably know them by heart. I do east of the mountains, but not on the west side.
Where would the North Coast?
The North Coast, Representative King, is also in the Northwest region.
When we create synergy and efficiencies, it would be through the regional coordinators, and I'm going to take you down to the next level of our schematic here so you can see how this applies out on the ground. This is just one basin model. We've taken the South Central Coordinator and we've exploded that into the basins and then down into actually the actual on the ground representations of the FWC, the Stormwater Conservation District, and the Watershed Council. There is an element of support, technical support, that is already there within the district level. We want to continue the process. There's also a level or a need at the basin level, if you will, focused on those state agencies and federal agencies that already provide a level of support for these areas, and we want to retain that expertise. Those are the folks that are already out there doing the work. And so we plug them in as a basic support team, and they've got technical expertise and proficiency. And that's kind of the essence of our organizational flow on the sections that you're dealing with tonight.
Greg, where do the soil and water districts fit in?
They fit in here in the their respective basins, and they are a part of the their current establishment right now. We don't collapse any. We don't aggregate physically any of those folks. And where we get the aggregations within the basin and into the coordinator, the five regions, and then develop that coordination. And as we go down this road with the committee of
other sections of this. Hopefully, that'll take a little difficult, and maybe Jan mentioned this, to kind of describe our whole complete concept as you're kind of dealing with this in section by section. But there are areas of our package that talk about the coordination element, how this actually works within the region, studying clear objectives and assessments and the like, so that that resource for those folks out on the ground.
Craig, what do you envision the responsibilities of this commission would be over other departments, natural resource departments?
They would have no rule writing or enforcement authority, with the exception of how the fiscal application or the funding is developed for the dollars that are there. So they embrace the current regulatory programs and systems, they embrace the Oregon plan, improvements and enhancements to that, and that is their arena. Not a new agency in that regard. Most of the landowners and natural resource groups are used to working with, you know, state agencies.
Maybe a follow-up, and then I'll open it up to the rest of the committee. How would you see your Drexel and the water districts down here supporting the basins? And you see the different, like forestry department, fish and wildlife, and those supporting them in the same way then?
Yes.
At the local level.
All right, it's our notion when we are able to further describe this process is to how those districts would begin to share resources, personnel, coordinators, technical folks, have that as a part of the complete package so that we don't miss that element as well.
Senator Turner?
Greg, can you go back to the previous slide? I showed you the watershed there. Of a chart. I count 17 basins at the bottom of that slide. Now there's 19, right?
Right. Two basins have no land mass. Columbia and the Snake River basins have no land mass associated with them, but they are statutorily determined, and so we're just determining for the 17 that do.
Mr. Chair, if I may. The Northwest region, Greg, does that take in part of the Willamette Valley all the way over to Astoria and the Coast Range? So we have the Coast Range included in the basins that would also be in the Willamette Valley.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Tynan, that's correct. And we were doing a map that shows clearly where those lines are. Sorry, we didn't have that slide.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I believe I have two questions. One is, how would we do address Columbia policies, issues, fiscal issues, in that since they don't have a land mass, there isn't evidently a watershed council dedicated to that. How do we respond to that?
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative King, I don't believe there are watershed councils or like entities in those areas now, except for the land masses that are associated. If you're looking at the Snake River Basin, for example, the people in the Baker area are associated with another basin, even though the Snake may be on the boundary. So there really isn't the same kind of setting on those two rivers.
It's too big and no one wants to tackle it, huh?
That's probably
possible.
Right. Now, the next question I had is that, you know, this looks very top down versus bottom up, and when we're working with, you know, watershed councils, it's, you know, we do want to do a lot of bottoms up work. But it's also true that if they don't ever get organized in a way we can organize, you know, coordinate with them, then maybe something happens. Has there been any dialogue with the watershed councils in terms of their getting themselves organized along this way? Is there feedback from them?
The easiest way to answer that question is that this is actually, while it may not look it is a bottom-up structure. We took the Soil and Water Conservation District and Watershed Council members and literally placed them at the commission level. So you have the local influence at that level. If spending the time is appropriate to describe to you our view of the world in terms of application of the dollars, you will see that these entities are a part of the planning process that
Yeah, if I could follow.
There are other members on the committee that might want to respond to that.
And I agree that there is, you know, the empowerment that you have described. I was talking more in terms of that it looks like this would be maybe legislatively mandated or people, you know, at your level that work with, you know, statewide on a lot of things that are, you know, putting this plan in place versus, you know, the watershed councils themselves coming forward and say, well, gee, you know, we need to get organized statewide and how should we do that and how do we get empowered? And I'm just wondering if there's that kind of, you know, grassroots up, you know, feed in informationally or buy into the processes versus, you know, some really intelligent people like yourselves, you know, saying we need to get organized and this is our best way to see how to do it.
I think we have in the other elements of our package the appropriate mechanisms to ensure that happens and actually forces, for example, state agencies that have accountability in the Limited Oregon Plan or salmon conservation or watershed enhancement. In our discussion of that, you'd find language that says these state agencies must consult, not may, but must consult with local watershed councils. They must look at their watershed action plan. They must review them. They must interact at that level. Or the Soil and Water Conservation District, if that's what exists. So that language and mechanism is in there. We don't have that displayed to you because we're not dealing with that section of the district.
Thank you.
This is the group that ultimately will hand out the grants, right? Do you have that process laid out yet? I mean, over the last couple of years, we've discussed with CWIP from time to time their process, and I would be curious to see. I mean, you're enlarging the group and bringing in some different kinds of players as to how that works out. Is each region of the five that you've got laid out, is each of them given so much money? And then they deal with those, or are they there for help and assistance to the regions and the money decision is made by the commission, or?
Well, Senator Duke, we anticipated that question, but we are...
That's good.
We are not at a point at this time to be able to... We're trying to get the conclusion around mechanisms or, as you say, process on that issue, and that's our purpose to do over the next year. Share that with you, but we have thoughts about it. And we're going to work our rear ends off to make sure.
Okay. It's not the main reason that I'm interested in it, but one of the reasons I'm interested in it is you've got the North Coast in with the Willamette Valley. And if the regional folks are making the decision, the North Coast is going to be getting crumbs from the table, and understandably so, but not something that I'd want to support. And the Columbia River, while their watershed councils are not organized into, you know, regional kinds of things, there are Columbia River watershed councils. And I represent a few of them, and I'd hate to see them get left out. So I will be anxious as this goes forward to find out how they fit into this. They are now applying for and receiving GWIB grants, even though they funnel into the Columbia River and not into directly into the ocean.
I don't think we put anything in the mechanism or process that will prevent them from doing
it at all. Maybe you will.
It's physical information. You've raised a legitimate issue that we need to address in this structure. And some feedback that we haven't really.
And you'll help me to understand which region. I assume they all get into the Northwest region as well. Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, the Columbia River runs along that border, and it hits, I believe, at least two, if not three, of those regions. So
you'll chop them up.
Yes. And I would also like to add, Mr. Chair, if I might, that you had asked about the governor's office. On our advisory council to the commission, we have, in the language we've prepared, we have included the governor's natural resources director as one of those advisory people.
Did you have a motion?
I'm sorry, no. I'm just trying to figure out the night here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'll ask this to Jan because she, I think, knows more than Greg does. I'm trying to envision, because when Representative King brought up the Columbia, I was trying to envision how that actually works. And the reality is the Columbia is a river shared by four states, and it is a river, but in reality, in your regional thing, wouldn't all of the watersheds in Oregon that feed the Columbia be included already?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, for example, the irrigators that we work with on the Columbia are all within the landmass to be included in the same region as the Umatilla Basin, for example. So it's the landmass, even though it's adjacent to the river, it's still included in the landmass region. For example, the coastal area would be part of that northwest region, even though there is a contiguity to the Columbia.
So, follow up, Mr. Chair? So to a degree, we're almost treating the Columbia like it was the ocean, with full realization that there's a four-state group that's dealing with the Columbia, so that's kind of beyond the scope of what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cruz, I think that many of those people are involved in the councils where their landmass areas are, and that's probably a good way to look at it, but I'd like to pursue further with Representative Dukes if someone has been left out in the process and how we could make it clear that that would not be the case.
Greg, could you, this is quite a change from what we've been operating under, and that's not to say the change isn't good, but could you identify for us what the goal is? First, identify the problem that with the present system, and then how this is going.
How do you get the maximum amount of money, a maximum amount of dollars out onto the ground for salmon restoration, conservation, enhancement? How do you get that out there in the most efficient way? And then how do the local efforts feed back into, so that those priorities that are set and the priorities that are meaning to them based on I think that's part and parcel of the issue that we're trying to get to.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We also wanted to address the need for independence, that it should be a totally independent entity. We also looked at what's called the Nebraska Plan, which is basically soil and water districts expanded to be broader watershed councils. Under that scenario, the whole commission was made up of those local people from the councils, and so we tried to blend what we have in Oregon with GWEB with the Nebraska Plan to bring as many people as possible from the bottom up to do just that. But we really think it needs to be an independent entity that can make its own decisions based on the grassroots level.
When we get to another opportunity to discuss this, we're trying to eliminate as much as possible competition out on the ground for the dollar so that you have a bunch of councils competing against SWCDs, against this, and trying to per se, we'll keep an issue with that regional coordination effort and those.
We'll probably hear more testimony tonight, but so far what we've heard from the watershed associations and councils is that it's been very needs some work done on it, some minor work, but we've heard a lot of confidence in what it's evolved to right now. And I guess that's why I asked the question, what are we trying to fix here? And maybe if we get on into this, we can identify that better. Any other questions of the committee?
I guess it's more of a comment. I just sort of an initial thing I wanted to talk about for you. On the Columbia River, excuse me, Watershed Council, I think it's a shame that there isn't more coordination, and so I guess just sort of off the top, I'm nervous about putting them into separate regions. It makes a certain amount of sense, and we certainly can't in Oregon control the destiny of the Columbia River, but we can control our section of it. And I wish there was more coordination amongst them. They're sort of stepchildren, not in the funding process or whatever, but in terms of playing the bigger role in the Columbia. And there's a lot of similarities between Eastern and Western Oregon on the Columbia River, and it would be nice to be able to link those up somehow. I don't know.
I'd like to be able to have a chance to, you know, talk sometime after the work session, because as I'm processing it, I'm thinking that along the Columbia, you know, at the mouth of the estuary, we have all those predator issues that are really significant, and that when we were up in Portland, we saw that the Columbia slough really has, you know, a lot of really, you know, substantial issues. We've got, you know, high population in the Portland metro, and, you know, they've got a, you know, a city up there that's doing an awful lot of efforts, and I'm just wondering if, you know, maybe we haven't weighed all the, I think we've weighed these in terms of geography, but we haven't necessarily weighed them in terms of, complexity of the issues.
If any, let me clarify for you, this is a public hearing, not a work session.
I understand that.
When you started, you said work session. We're not going to make a decision.
No, I was just saying that I could see that I need a bit more education there, and it'd be helpful for me to do that.
I agree. It's going to take, we're going to need a lot of discussion. Any other questions? Mr. Rick, ready?
I certainly.
Share some concerns with both Representative King and Senator Dukes on this. The only thing I'm concerned with Senator Dukes' comment, original comment, that Oregon began at the confluence of the Willamette and the Columbia River and went west. The Columbia clearly for that area of eastern Oregon is really a major sort of concern with us, and it's also in that particular area that we get into some of these other problems that are current when we start to deal with this, and that's those things that we put across the Columbia ultimately to generate electricity from. I'm not sure how we do that in right now, but I do think it's an issue that is important that we keep maybe off separate look at a little more carefully. Thank you, Senator.
I'm not going there.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just wanted to say, Mr. Chair, from a slightly different perspective in my conversations with Watershed Council folks in the south part of the state, what I have heard more than anything is a fear that we are going to do something to jeopardize their funding than they are more of a support of something that's a known entity that they are getting funded in, and more of a fear that we're going to do something that would move clear away from their model. So I think it's probably maybe a mixed bag there.
Any other questions? Thank you both very much. And I want to say that I know you folks in your group have done an awful lot of work in the past week, long week, I guess, and I very much appreciate it. We'll be wanting to hear much more from you. Representative Johnson.
A question on living issues have, and I do note the
As you indicated, the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission, which is a change that we had from the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which was a change from the from the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board. There's obviously been quite a bit of
Quite a bit of thought or something. I mean, we renamed this, and I'm curious as what type of thinking what was going into that. And I'm a little nervous. There's an awful lot goes into a name, and a lot of what happens after we get through comes from whatever it is we name this particular body. So I was curious where the thinking was at.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, we had the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, which are the soil and water districts, as well as some watershed council members in our work group, so they were aware of all of the issues at their level, and to try to blend the councils and the districts together, and because conservation is one of the most important programs that many of these councils will be working on, we wanted to have the name conservation someplace in the formula, and people thought that a commission had maybe a little more status than a board, and that's how we arrived at that particular name.
If I could follow. I appreciate that, but I'm wondering if the conservation RE versus enhancement, if we get a weighting here in conservation, and I know we can debate that, that maybe the two are somewhat the same thing. But it's that area that kind of caused me to be a little concerned about where the name came from and where we might go with that.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Jensen, we like the structure, and quite frankly, we wouldn't care so much what the name is if we could have a structure like this.
And just for the record, it's an acronym that you can't do any damage to.
Are you okay, Representative? Okay. Any other questions?
It's pretty close to ouch.
I think you better quit there. I'd like to next call Mike Probst and Mike Swain. Would you like to come up at the same time? While they're coming up, I need to announce that Senate Bill 1196 was scheduled for later on this evening. If anyone in the audience is waiting for that bill, we're simply going to do a tap-tap on that. So you don't have to stay here all evening. Come
here. First?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mike Probst, Polk County Commissioner, and I'm representing Associated Oregon Counties today. And first off, I'd like to start off addressing just a little bit of the presentation that you just heard. It was our first time to actually see that, but the concepts in that presentation line up with the thinking of the Associated Oregon Counties on the bottom-up approach, the local control issue. Being able to see this for a short period of time, I'm pretty impressed with what that coalition has put together. I think they've done a lot of good work on it, so I think considering what they've put together is worth looking at. One of the areas, though, that I have a concern, and our association has a concern, in the draft, two amendments, it was changed, and counties, local governments were taken out. And I don't know if that was on purpose or a mistake. I assume it was probably a mistake because we've been involved all along, but we have been removed as one of the participants on the board. And I think regardless of what the name is, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board or the Oregon Watershed Conservation Commission, we have been involved right from the start with watershed councils, with the Oregon plan, and I think it is really important that we stay involved as local governments. we are on these boards representing a lot of different interests. If you look at the makeup of the board, everybody else on the board are basically representing their interests. But as local governments, we have to look at a lot of interests. And I think there's a real value to us being on these boards and commissions to work on the different watershed issues. So we definitely would like to be included back in the bill, whatever form it comes out. And that's the main thing that we wanted to testify to today, and that's the section, I think, basically that you're looking at today. So if there's any questions on that, I'd be glad to answer them.
And you're talking about the
page 17.
Page 17. Okay, Watershed Enhancement
Board. Watershed Enhancement Board. And in the draft that was also handed in previous testimony, were also not included in that draft either of their concept. And whichever one you go with, we'd love to be part of it.
Any questions, Mr. Probst?
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Good afternoon, Chairman Leslie, members of the committee. My name is Mike Swain. I'm the mayor of Salem. I'm here representing the League of Oregon Cities. I'm a member of the board of directors. I shared some time with Representative Leslie and one of the governor's salmon strategy teams. I serve on the North Santa Ana Watershed Council. And just to show you the conflicted kind of personality I have, I'm a former chair of the Mount Jefferson Group of the Sierra Club, and was a pro bono lawyer that brought the administrative appeal to protect the Opal Creek Wilderness, that through the help of Senator Hatfield has now been given federal protection. So I come with some background to this issue and certainly a lot of concern. And one of those issues of concern deal more with my present circumstances as mayor than my former circumstances as a pro bono lawyer, and that's the issue of the city's role in this scheme of things. You know, the cities could be somewhat philosophical, some would say smug, when they were listing the spotted owl. And it was the cities up there in the canyon that had concern. It was the timber industry that was impacted. It wasn't cities that were impacted. The same with the listing of the coastal coho. It was those communities out there on the coast. It wasn't our communities along the Willamette that were impacted. But those of us try to maintain a foot in several camps, both the business as well as the environmental, knew the day of reckoning was coming, in which the spotlight would burn exceedingly bright and hot on urban areas. And, of course, that has now happened. That day of reckoning has arrived with the listing of the Chinook and the Steelhead in the mid and upper Willamette. Cities, as you know, are really at the forefront of the regulatory consequences of the Endangered Species Act. We're intricately implicated in the process. Some would suggest we're snared in the process and that we're there to be offered up as dinner for some other in the chain of food. But we're very much involved in the regulatory scheme. And we're there because we hold permits from the federal government, both point source and non-point source discharge permits. We maintain surface water impoundments that have impacts with respect to what you're able to do in the way of growth, as well as the issue of water quality. And certainly we're regulated by DLCD with respect to our land uses and our land plans. What cities are asking, in essence, is to become an active participant, really in helping to recover the species, helping to recover fish. And that's kind of interesting. You know, regardless of what people's attitudes in our community seem to be about the Endangered Species Act, and whether on this side or that side or dead in the middle, nobody wants to be responsible, no matter what their background, for seeing the species go extinct. You know, and it doesn't matter what interest you talk to, whether it be timber industry or whether it be agriculture or the cities. Nobody wants to be the interest that was targeted and responsible for allowing the species to go extinct. The cities are very much involved right now. We're making investments into various GWEBs, watershed councils. We have several within the city of Salem that we help fund, as well as the North Santa Ana Watershed Council. And we're going to be heavily involved in trying to implement the regulations that are coming down the pike with the ESA. We've proposed several suggestions for this particular legislation. I believe you have those before you, seven in number, and just real briefly the essence of each. Elected officials should be on any policy setting or coordinating body. I think it's really important to have a voice of elected officials, municipal elected officials, there at the table. We also, I think, need to have representation of our technical people, our public works directors, on any sort of technical advisory bodies, along with the academic community, the people that can provide us with the good science. That seems to be the point of legitimacy for a lot of discussion of what goes on. If the people believe that there's good science being brought to bear, they're willing to accept the sacrifices and the regulations with a little less acrimony and disappointment than otherwise the case. We need to simplify things. We need to have one single point of contact in the state so that we don't have to go through multiple layers and various points of contact to find out what it is that we need to do. We need to have the integration of the several acts that we need to be concerned about, not only the Endangered Species Act, but the Clean Water Act, and all the rules and regulations of various state agencies, as well as any regional rules that might come out of this. We certainly encourage and reinforce consistency in the direction of goals over the long time while preserving the flexibility that's so necessary to, I think, effective implementation of strategy. The problem is really complex and multifaceted, and we believe, I think, that any solution is going to have to be equally as complex and multifaceted, and the cities can play a role in bringing some of that creativity to the table. Certainly, we feel that the important key agencies need to be adequately funded to succeed, and those would include, of course, the Water Resources Department, the Department of Environmental Quality, and the DLCD. And finally, there has to be an integrated approach to habitat, harvest, hatchery, and hydroelectric considerations in the long term if, in fact, we're going to have an opportunity to recover the species. With respect to the Dash 2 amendments, I simply draw your attention to Section 18, add six new members to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. There's a category for urban residents. We would suggest that city representation of elected city officials ought to be fit into that scheme of things under the kind of the resource that particular category suggests. Also would suggest that you consider adding industry and the building industry to the board to get their unique perspectives. They're going to be intimately involved in the process here. Well, let me just say by way of closing that regardless of how we as a state got here in terms of the need for regulatory intervention, as I say, no interest wants to be responsible for driving salmon or steelhead into extinction. And as cities, we want and we think we should be and we need to be at the table in this state-led effort. So thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Mr. Swaim, Mayor Swaim, you mentioned that the City of Salem, I believe, is investing in watershed councils. Is that with staff helping with the technical work? Is that actual cash investments? Or?
It's both. We have some urban watershed councils, Pringle Creek being one of them, Vin Creek being another, in which we actually staff the watershed. We actually provide funding for projects that they have been working on. We are also part of the larger North Staniam Watershed Council. We have been coordinating the efforts there and have been helping to secure funding for joint collaborative efforts that affect the North Staniam watershed itself. So we're both a financial as well as a source of information and experience.
And in those urban watershed councils, do they have coordinators, or do you provide that as a city? Or?
We provide that as a city. We plug them actually into our neighborhood association system, so they are advisory to city council along with neighborhoods on issues of water quality and impact of those water quality issues.
Thank you. Any other questions, Senator Dukes?
Given your statement that there should be a single point of contact in the state with authority to enforce, do you see this working? Well, we've got five regional coordinators.
Well, in my, Chairman Messley and Senator Dukes, In my personal opinion, that seems unworkable from what we're trying to accomplish here, which is a simplification and a more direct line of responsibility between the several levels of interest involved in this. If you're talking about the system that was just proposed before us, you know, I think that makes it more complicated, in my opinion. And I think the more complicated it gets, the less easy it's going to be to implement some rather painful strategies that are going to have to be implemented, because people are going to get frustrated with the system, and they won't much care about the substance, and that's of concern to me.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Mike and I don't always agree on things, but a lot of times we do. One of the advantages I see of a regional coordinator's the way this is laid out is things just aren't the same in different parts of the state. And the way this is laid out with your regional coordination, that can be taken into account instead of the one size fits all. And that's when I looked at that. That's what I call the advantage of this. So you may be implementing it a little different in the regions, but as long as it was still that one point of contact for that region, I think you get around that problem of the single point of contact. So I think we can have both and still have the regions. And also, what I have to say right now is not from the Associated Oregon Counties. It's my role on watershed councils. I've chaired two watershed councils, the Yamhill Watershed Council for 4 years and the Rick Rail Watershed Council for 2 years. And the concern that was brought up earlier about changing the system, I think anytime there's change, there's always somebody's concerned about, is it going to be worse than what we have today? What I like about the change we're proposing in these both these concepts is that there is more local input on how things will be funded, the structure, and I think that will make it work better. I think the real goal is to get the money on the ground where it will do the most good. And by having expertise from around the state locally, I think you'll really benefit in the long run from that. It may be a little bumpy getting there, but I think long term there's some benefits to it.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments? Thank you both very much. Thank you. Roy Hemingway.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Roy Hemingway. I'm the manager of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds in the Governor's Office. I want to thank you for your patience in working through these various proposals and for your willingness to continue the dialogue with all the interested individuals and groups who are trying to help get to a solution on these problems. Clearly we're getting closer, I think, and the areas of difference are getting narrower. I have some prepared testimony on the sections of the Dash 2 amendments, which is before you. I'm not going to read that testimony. I'll give you a few oral comments. With respect to membership in Section 18, we're comfortable with the new proposed composition, but having been in one of these situations where we've tried to pick representative stakeholders to fill a number of positions, it always turns out that you have more stakeholders who have expectations of being on a committee or a commission or a board then you have slots to fill. And that always ends up with somebody who feels unrepresented. And we would suggest that the geographic representation, the last proposal that was before you, Greg and Jan's, was a geographic representation, and we feel that that probably is a better one and does end up representing all the stakeholder groups. rather than trying to identify individual stakeholders to put on a larger board. In Section 18, one more issue is of concern to us, and that is the question about operating by consensus. As you know, GWEB has largely operated by consensus. There's only been one grant in the last biennium that has had a split vote, and the situation is that we don't anticipate a problem. But when we make it a legal requirement, there's always the possibility that one person may decide that they're going to vote no until they get their way on something, and a consensus breaks down. So we would prefer either that language be dropped. As you are aware, just as in the legislature and most committees, you operate by consensus until you absolutely have to take a vote. We would expect that GWEB would do the same, either drop the reference to consensus or give a definition of what consensus means and allow the board to develop rules that would interpret it. In Section 19, I talked about this question at the last time I testified before the committee. There was a question of whether state and federal agencies should be eligible for grants. As you know, we're probably net beneficiaries here. There are many more times that the state is recipients of state grants, but there are circumstances where a state or federal agency as part of a larger project or part of a larger getting a whole stream done, a stream reach done, it may be wise to have a state or federal agency participate. We don't anticipate that that's going to be a common way for state agencies to supplement their budgets. It hasn't been in the last biennium, but we do have a concern that barring them to be applicants we will come to regret that at some point when we have a project that we do want to complete. We would suggest you ask Water.
Could I get further clarification on that? We have had grant requests from agencies for other than projects on the ground. Are you suggesting that we do have a policy that would only provide funding to state agencies for on-the-ground work?
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that that we be able to look at each project on its own merits. I think there are enough protections in this board as it's made up to prevent frivolous projects from going forward. Even if the backers of Measure 66 got their wish and all of these funds were treated as new money, it isn't sufficient funds for there to be a lot of freedom to fund projects that don't go directly to restoring watersheds in Oregon. I would prefer that it simply be left out that anyone can make an application and that they all be judged on their own merits. Clearly, if this is abused, this is something the emergency board and the legislature are going to hear about. I'm aware of one circumstance where there was a concern in the last biennium, and I don't think that one circumstance should be enough to eliminate funding for every possible project. Finally, with respect to Section 21, we have a technical concern about the need for the Watershed Improvement Grant Fund, and I won't go into the details there. We can talk about that when we get into the work session. And finally, with respect to Section 22 and 23, I think the language in those sections as proposed is acceptable. Again, thank you for the opportunity to comment on this legislation, and we'll be here every time you are meeting and prepared to work closely with you and the other interested parties to get a bill that will do the best job for Oregonians in getting these funds out to the sewer watersheds.
Roy, would you care to make any comments on the proposal we heard this evening from the Natural Resource Group?
Mr. Chairman, we just like everybody else, we thought, I think for the first time today, today's been a long day, so I can't remember whether it was yesterday or today. There are parts of it that we like. We like the geographic representation. There are parts that I think we'd like to see clarified. There were a couple of minor areas that we would have some concern about. But overall, we think that this represents probably a pretty good bookend where there's not a lot of disagreement among the Dash 2 and this proposal. We think for us to say that we're not on the same page of music, basically. So we will get some formal reaction to it, if that's what you'd like.
One area that I'm concerned about that I'd like your comment would be on the regions. And could you explain exactly, you have somewhat regions now. I know as the grant requests come in, you have regional committees that review those grants, and then it goes from there to technical committees. So maybe it would be valuable for the committee to understand that relationship.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd indulge me, I'd like to have Ken Beerley, the director of GWEB, and Louise Soliday, the governor's watershed advisor, to advise on that question, if that's all right.
For the record, Ken Beerley with the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board. The current staffing of GWEB is organized around five specific regions. The North Coast, which is from the includes the Columbia drainages of Clatsop County south to and including the Siuslaw drainage. The South Coast, including the Rogue and Umpqua in their entireties, is the second region. The third region is the Willamette Basin from Ridgetop to the mouth at Portland. And then we've divided the Central Oregon at basically the eastern edge of the John Day Basin. Umatilla Basin being in the eastern Oregon. So we've divided along watershed lines of Central Oregon from eastern Oregon. So we have both drainages that drain to the Columbia in Central Oregon as well as the Klamath drainage, which drains south to California.
Mr. Sheriff, I just might add, in looking at the Natural Resource Louise Soliday, Governor's Office, in looking at the Natural Resource Coalition proposal, what they are proposing to do to define regions is to use the Water Resources Department statute that defines regions for the purposes of appointing Water Resources Commission. The concern we would have with that, using that construct, is that in the case of the Willamette Basin, it would be split into two separate regions. From a watershed program perspective, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you're looking at managing on a watershed level. The construct that GWEB created was to make sure that we were on watershed lines and trying to group watersheds along lines that had somewhat similar resource issues with regard to evolutionary significant units under the ESA and other issues that are like for those areas. So I think the using the Water Resource Commission regions is somewhat problematic because it doesn't get at the whole watershed concept.
Do you have any other comments you'd like to? Don't run away yet. Does the committee have any questions? Comments? Something I'm concerned about is that we're at some point we're going to have to cost out some of these things, and I'm guessing that the new proposal could possibly require much more staff. But I'm not sure I want to send the whole thing for a fiscal report at this time. But if you could I ask Ken or any of you folks to, from your perspective and your experience, and I'll ask the Natural Resource Group the same thing, to cost out what we have now as well as what you
might see in the proposal?
Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to do that. We will need to have some discussion with the proponents about exactly what they have in mind in terms of a new function versus an existing function that isn't statutory. For example, the idea of a regional coordinator, we do have, I don't know what we call them, but we have regional people who work with watershed councils in each of these five regions already that are on the payroll and doing a job, and whether the proposers have something else in mind than what they do, or have those, or are trying to make those functions statutory, we'll need to find out. We'd be happy to get that information for you.
Any other comments or questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to, that's all that we have signed up, but I'd like to open it up if someone else would like to testify.
For the record, my name is Deborah Boone. I'm a part-time coordinator of the Mechanical and Watershed Council. Just maybe just a question on the procedure that you have here. I'm just canvassing now for the first time, too, and the Watershed Council is meeting 1 hour and seeing if I'm not going to make it. But I can fax it to them. But all this is going is very quickly, and I see the schedule lists certain sections by certain days. And what I'd like to do is be able to take something like this and what's coming out of these committee hearings, because they can't be here, and I am, get it back to them, and comment, and then be able to, if I have to, testify before you what they think from the grassroots level. So I don't know if that's what you have in mind. Is this going to be the first and only time to comment on those sections?
No. I know we're going to have at least one more day, and I think maybe Saturday. Judith is checking for me right now. Of course, we'll have general hearings, too, once we get through the sections. For Debbie and everyone else, including myself, on Thursday we'll be covering exactly the same sections, although I take that back. We're going to be expanding a little bit on sections 24 and 25 and 26, but we'll also cover 18 through 23. And then on April 17th, we will again deal with the legislative findings for section 17. And my guess is that if there's people up for Saturday, that we'll open that up for. In fact, I'll be chairing that meeting, so we'll open that up for public hearing as well.
And then after you finish with the sections, then we'll do it again.
I'm sure we will. When we get close to work session and we put it together as a package, yes.
Because I can say at least get something in on the record on this, just glancing through it. I know that our Watershed Council will look at this and go, oh, my God.
Well, they might say they like it, on the other hand. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify? Thank you very much. With that, we'll close the hearing on 3225. And the hearing on Senate Bill 1161. Would the staff introduce the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1161 ratifies the Columbia River Natural Resources Management Compact. Article 1 of the compact sets out its purpose is to promote the better regional management and coordination of natural resources in the Columbia River Basin. Article 2 sets that the compact will become effective when executed by each state participating, as well as Congress. Article 3 establishes the Columbia River Governance Commission, consisting of up to three representatives from each participating state, one being a natural resource agency administrator. Those members will serve for four-year terms, and the voting powers are limited to one vote for each state in the compact. Article 4 sets out the duties of the commission, primarily to assess state and federal natural resource programs, participate in decision-making by federal agencies on issues affecting the Columbia River Basin. The commission is granted the power to recommend coordination of the exercise of police powers. Further, the commission is asked to draft recommendations to the respective governors and legislative branches dealing with the governance and management of the Columbia River and related natural resources. It further asks the commission to consult with and advise pertinent state agencies, as well as recommend to federal and state jurisdictions regarding changes to federal or state statutes, regulations, or rules for the better management of the Columbia River Basin. Article 5 of the compact says that the commission shall elect a chair and vice chair that will serve at the pleasure of the commission. Article 6 sets the voting method as a majority vote of the whole number of compacting states. Article 7 states that the respective state natural resource agencies shall serve as the official research agency of the commission. Then on page 3, we go to Article 8, which states that nothing in the compact shall be construed to limit the powers of any state. Article 9 simply says that the absence of representation will be brought to the attention of the appropriate governor. Article 10 says that the money that will be needed to run the commission will be divided in the following way. 60% of the annual budget will be shared by those states having the Columbia River as their boundary, and 40% of the operating budget of the commission will be shared by the other compacting states. Article 11 says that 6 months written notice shall be given for any state who wants to back itself out of the compact. And finally, Article 12 indicates that the state of Nevada or any state having rivers or streams that are tributary to the Columbia may become a member of the compact.
No, not a staff. Of you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming, since how the legislators on this were the folks in Spokane, that this was discussed with the other states when you were up there? Or have you had any input from them on this concept?
Susan, help me out. I don't recall any specific discussion as to the individual language or the exact language of the compact, no.
But conceptually.
Conceptually, maybe, to some degree, yeah.
Conceptually, there was real broad agreement on this general direction, but there wasn't.
I'm not objecting to it, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we've had, I think this is a good concept. I'm just wondering if there have been conversations with Washington, Idaho, and Montana.
Well, it's unfortunate the senator's not here because he's been quite involved in developing this concept. And I just got word that he's probably going to be 15 to 20 minutes before he arrives. So this will not be a work session. I see we schedule it as a possible work session, but we're not even close.
Shoot, I thought we could move something tonight.
Any other comments? That's Cindy King?
I haven't got all the through it. I was just wondering if this in any way, I understand it's a much bigger scope than the Columbia River Gorge Commission, but I just wanted maybe someone had a sense of, does this in any way supersede that, or are they just, you know, two completely different functions where maybe one inputs into the other, but it's different functions? And if I don't have the answer now, I can get the answer some other time.
Just a following, not anything with that, the Columbia River Gorge Commission. More just the gorge concerns about that. And of course, that is not something that necessarily the states of Montana or Idaho would have a particular horse in that race on the Columbia River Gorge. As contrasted to the Columbia River Governance Commission, those states would have significant interest, I would think, in the governance of the Columbia River. And I'm not sure whether that's what the conversations have been or what it was, but that's just what it strikes me.
Great. Leanne, would you like to weigh in on this? You've been closer to this process than anyone here probably.
For the record, my name is Leanne Blakeney, and I'm the Natural Resources Policy Analyst for the House Majority Office. There was a prototype of this bill that was in our packet in Spokane. So the other states are aware of at least something, a structure like this. I don't think it was this particular bill, but some of the language was quite similar. I could try to go find that. Is that something you would need for this evening?
No, not tonight. No.
Okay.
Representative Cruz, yeah. Senator Nelson.
You know, thank you, Mr. Chair. In the other meetings, the four state meetings that we had over the course of the last couple of years, you know, this is the type of thing we were looking to have as we kept, well, especially if you look at the history of the Columbia River system and the multitude of attempts that have been made to try to get some sort of governance on it and all have failed quite miserably, actually. And I guess this sort of procedure, this sort of putting this sort of process in place at least gives us a solid point for discussion as far as how we implement something. So, you know, I like what you have done here, and I would like to see us move it soon and get it to the other states so they can take a look at it.
I do have one concern, and that is that in the makeup in Washington State right now, it's going to be very difficult to get them to sign on to any kind of compact, is my guess. But that has changed in the last election cycle.
It's probably difficult for them to even pass a bill, but then that may be a good thing for the state of Washington. You know?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did they talk anything about the funding, where that's coming from, how it's going to be? Do we have any sort of budgetary considerations still? The discussions indicate that 60% of the Article 10, 60% would be paid by the state. Is there any discussion in detail?
I don't believe we had any discussions of budgets. Just tried to analyze or get some kind of a percentage figure as far as we went. Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think maybe for them too. Was there any, or is there any thought or discussion about how this potentially conflicts with Northwest Power Plant Council, which has representation from the various states mentioned here, and the roles they have played in?
Well, the Power Planning Council created by Congress has two oversight functions. One is of the power system, and secondly, to balance the needs of the power system with that of fish and wildlife in the region. They are active participants in just because of their state representation, just about every regional decision-making process, including the Columbia River Forum. This would not conflict with that, at least from my understanding of it, but would give us, you, a way to insert yourself and your views of how the Columbia River system should be run.
Representative Jensen?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm appreciative of what you're saying, ma'am, but is there a possibility that Northwest Power Planning Council might see this differently and see it as something of a threat to their not that that particularly concerns me, but if you have any sense of that.
Well, I don't think that they would. I think that they, in fact, might appreciate some of the states having closer state input. And I think if the council feels threatened at all by any process, it's likely to form. It looks as if it's trying to set itself up for somewhat, you know, taking over the functions of the Power Planning Council.
Fine, just observation. It's not any questions. It's observation that the executive department here has been trying over the course of the last 2 years to make some structural changes there as far as this whole issue is concerned. Governor's office people all disappeared here.
I'm not aware of any. Representative Morgan?
Just to add a comment here that may help Representative Johnson, I did go to the last meeting of this organization. It was the only meeting that I've ever to need to be is a forum that's made up of members of the state. And the issues that we discussed were issues that kind of clarified for me the perspectives of the different states. And it didn't relate necessarily, although there was a lot of it, that related to the actual flow of the water in the banks of the river, but a lot of it related to the needs within the state, to the allocation of that water, and different issues that just related to the economics issues within the state that were being impacted by issues that were what states' rights actually were as related to water. I don't see it as something that will be in competition or in any way a threat to the
I wasn't suggesting that that it should or would be. I was merely looking for what perceptions might be, and I certainly share with you, Representative Morgan, that at least my frustration since I've been here dealing with these issues, the lack of information that I have as far as what's going on in Washington, Montana, and Idaho, and what the perceptions of the legislatures are there revolving around these issues. And some of it we can get a little bit by ourselves, but it certainly would help if we had a more organized way to do that. And
I think, Representative Jensen, that one of the purposes of this group would be to get better representation both on the Power Planning Council and on the governor's forums, if it ever gets off the ground. And I can also tell you, in my perception at least, that a huge concern of Montana and Idaho is that they don't want to release any more water so that Oregon can withdraw more water. And they're very concerned about that. Although I think also in my own mind that that's a different issue. They're releasing more water for the fish traveling in their waters. And in our part of the system, we have enough water for them, for the fisheries to transport. You're welcome, Senator Raioli. Don't leave me. We're not through with you yet. Representative Morgan?
See, I think another benefit of this organization would be that we need to keep in mind that the Clean Water Act and the Endangered Species Act are two pieces of legislation that impact hugely what all of these states are facing, and that by forming a regional coalition of legislators we can have a stronger voice when we talk about these issues on the federal level, too, and that's an important aspect of this.
I think Representative Cruz has found his calling. Representative King?
Could we give the Hanford issues to this organization?
I hope not. Senator Crioli, this is your project.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Colleagues, in our first legislative session, we were looking for ways to get connected with the whole process of Columbia River governance. And it just seems like one of those things that keeps rolling over, pardon the pun, legislators from Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana who have a direct stake in trying to get management authority over the issues that will affect the well-being of those communities, economically, socially, the agricultural production, the shipping, all of those attributes that we derive from the beneficial uses of water. Governor Kitzhaber took the initiative, really, and moved forward with a process he called Three Sovereigns. And we had some difficulties with the way the sovereignty group was put together, but no difficulty with the idea that we needed some kind of a coordinating mechanism to tie the interests of the state together. And I suppose it had more to do with the definition of what a sovereign is. I've never felt that a federal agency representative was a sovereign, more an employee. The tribal interests certainly are sovereigns. But when we looked at the issue of the executive, that is one of three branches of government in a state. And that doesn't necessarily mean that the governor speaks for all the folks in the state. So we were looking for a mechanism to work more cooperatively with our other legislative branch members in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana. And over a series of 2 years, in the interim, the meetings that we had basically outlined the proposal where we would come together as states in a voluntary organization in an agreement that would knit us together for the purposes of channeling our collective energy into the management of Columbia River issues. So what you have before you is a compact that would accomplish that goal. It's essentially available to those that would like to join. It's a voluntary kind of an agreement. And it provides a forum for folks to get together from the legislative perspective and talk about those issues that intersect with the folks that we represent, our constituent bases. So I'm hoping that we can get this bill passed in 4 states during this legislative session. We know that we can get it passed in 3 because one's already adjourned. But we're going to ask the President of the Senate and the House to ratify a memorandum of agreement until they can get back into the session and adopt this compact. But as we met in Washington State about, what was it, a month ago, Representative Morgan, and talked about this very issue, and it's just one of those things that we think ought to be done because we need a mechanism, a formalized mechanism for collecting the input of state legislators and focusing legislators on this question. So I would urge passage on this bill.
I think it's a good concept. I'm supportive of this, but it also makes me think that in doing this, we've got to be prepared to possibly send some money to another state for a project, you know, that comes out of this because the compact says, you know, this is the best way. And it might be, you know, politically tough at some point. If this is not quite all federal money, then we don't have any problem. But, you know, if we're taking K-12 money and basically sending it to, you know, do a major water project in Montana instead of Oregon, I can see that, you know, that might be a pretty hard decision, though.
Could
you
respond to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to that. The agreement doesn't require a state to spend any money outside its own boundaries. More or less what we're doing is we'd be joining an organization where we would share expenses. And it would be no different, I think, than the Council of State Governments or the which we are all members of, or the Western Legislative Forestry Task Force, which some of us are members of, or the Pacific Fisheries Conference, which some of us are members of. In other words, it would be an organization that's bound together by a common interest. And we will have our own expenses to deal with and travel expenses for members that go to meetings. But I can't envision any situation where we would actually engage any project where we'd have expenses in another state unless that was specifically authorized by a legislative action that all of us would vote on.
If I could follow up then, you know, it wasn't immediately clear to me that this would not be doing any capital projects, but you know, if this is purely administrative, then you know, those issues go away.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, this is a policy group that would get together and discuss issues, and it might in fact lead to a situation where we would consider something as sweeping as how to participate or how to continue to participate with Bonneville Power Administration. But that is probably a decade in the future, and we don't know what lies between here and there. So I just can't imagine anything that would be authorized as an expenditure that wouldn't be authorized by leadership directly in a process or that would come before a body like this.
I'm going to first ask staff to, she's found some language that helps explain this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, if you look on page 3 of the bill, lines 14 and 15, the fiscal, I understand, will be an indeterminate impact because if you'll see there, it's only obligating the states to make available annual funds for specifically for the support of the commission, not any sorts of projects or that type of area. And we have received a no revenue impact.
Senator Cruz?
No, go ahead.
I'll look at you.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. One, possibly two questions, Senator Ferrioli. Do you like this in the form it is?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Cruz, this is, yes, I do. We've discussed this among a whole bunch of different folks from different states, and everybody seemed to think that this is loose enough that it doesn't bind anybody to anything that wouldn't pass the gag test in their own legislature, but provides a framework where we can all get together and talk over issues.
Okay. The second question, Mr. Chair, would was based on the answer to the first question, and since I got an affirmative answer there, I'm wondering why we don't move it tonight.
Sarah?
Great minds think alike. That's exactly the same kind of question that I had. I don't know why we couldn't.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize, I have the wrong folder tonight, so I haven't looked at this bill since we introduced it with that big stack of things some time ago. I hope we'll take a little more time and chew it over a little more. There was, for Senator Ferrioli's benefit, there was discussion before you came in about how this would interact with the Northwest Power Planning Council and the Columbia River Forum. There's also a Columbia River Fish and Wildlife Basin Council out there that is for state and involves the feds and the states. And I hope we'll have a chance to see how all of these things will interplay with each other and with the tribes and you know, the federal government and see where it works. And I've heard a number of things. I can recall, I think the first time I heard this discussed was in Boise, Idaho, when last year's version of the four states getting together. And there was a legislator from Washington State who envisioned projects, as Representative King was talking about earlier, and had them laid out. And fortunately or unfortunately for the rest of us, the biggest one was in Washington State. But it did cross over into Oregon, so we were going to help pay for it. And there were just a number of those kinds of things. I mean, I would like to think that we have a chance to get a better vision with the other states of where this might take us. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just like to chew it over a little bit and see how it fits in with the rest of them. There's one more group for the sake of one more group doesn't get me there.
I, as co-chair, I would be hesitant to run it out this fast because I think we have four members absent tonight. And there might be other groups such as the ports and some of the river users who might want to weigh in and give us some input. I think we've laid it out tonight, and we ought to advertise another meeting.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond?
Sure.
I think we do need to have as many of the members present to vote as possible. Representative Leonard is a appointee to the committee, Representative Thompson, always has a strong opinion about issues. I would rather wait and have any other discussion that we need to have so that this committee moves forward as close to a unanimous vote as we can get, because I think it sends a strong message. I really believe that a forum like this gives us the possibility of kicking around some great potential discussions, and we weren't very pleased with the idea that the forum sort of was a train that left the station without legislators on board. And we really fought hard to elevate the legislators to a position of policy discussions because we are a co-equal branch. The best way for us to get to the table perhaps is make our own. And we found that by going and talking to legislators from Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana, we've got so much in common with folks, and the issues are exactly the same. We thought we were talking about fear and suspicion, and when we first got together, the folks from Idaho and Montana were very skeptical because they thought all we wanted to do was get the release of stored water so we could increase Columbia River flow. And when we all came together over the issue of Columbia River dam breaching, it was sort of a breakthrough. It feels hard sometimes. But I just think this is a great opportunity, but I'd like the whole committee to make the recommendation to move it forward onto the floor. And remember, colleagues, we take one action in this committee, and that's it. There's no other committee that hears it besides our committee. We'll move it. If we move it off this forum, it goes to the floor in both houses. So let's be careful. Let's be sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair, morning. Wouldn't this have fiscal impact?
Mr. Co-Chair, if we have the indeterminate fiscal impact, it really isn't a matter that we can determine would be over $50,000, so it wouldn't be a referral away from me.
Any other comments? Senator Duch?
Now that Judith has kind of given me a copy of the bill. I have a question. According to this, each state has three people on the commission, and one of them is charged with the management of natural resources, or is from an agency charged with natural resources. So there's one agency person from each state, and I haven't yet found where the other two come from. I'm assuming they're legislators?
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond. The way that bill should have been drafted, they better be legislators, and they better be one from each chamber.
Okay.
Doesn't fall, and we need to have this bill specified because that was the intent.
Do we get the right partisanship in here?
We can do that too.
Mr. Chair, that was a concern that I had as I read this first thing. That I thought, well, shoot, we're going to have an agency person here, and it doesn't specify legislators. And then if you read on page 1, line 20, as determined by state statutes, so apparently we'd have to draft additional legislation under if we pass this to determine who or what or from where the other representatives of the commission would come from. So if we need to further clarify, either in this bill or in a different item.
Probably would like to check on that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking all the more reason for us to be careful and prudent in our consideration.
Any more discussion? That will close the hearing on Senate Bill 1161. Open the hearing on Senate Bill 1196 for the staff. You want to introduce it briefly? And we'll pack it out again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1196 requires the Department of Environmental Quality to conduct a water pollution study of the Willamette River. It does appropriate money, so we do have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on this measure.
And I had a request today that they were not prepared to come to testify, and so I would prefer to just tap this back out again.
Senator, haven't we ever done one of these?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Duke, the issue was brought before us by Senator Yee and other folks. The Committee on Water and Land Use brought this bill forward to us. Senator Yee, in connection with discussions that she was having with the Department of Environmental Quality, was following up on a question about studies. How many studies have you got? Who paid for them? What were their purposes and where are they? And one of the answers was that 10 years of data had been collected, or at least contracted for, and 9 years of data had been collected on the Willamette, and for some reason the company that was doing the synthesis and collection had gone out of business and not delivered the data, and the data was lost. So that letter was a letter was written by Senator Yee to the Department of Environmental Quality requesting the data, and it showed up in a box that was about 2 feet square. So,
so we have the data.
We have a lot of data, and I think the purpose now of the bill would be to look at the data, find out who, what, where, when, and why. And instead of our committee looking at paying for additional studies, maybe it's time we synthesize some of these, did a reasonable survey of the literature that's been published, summarized the data, and made it available to decision makers in an index form that we could actually pull information out of these studies. I have received a box of data from recent Willamette River water quality and pollution studies, and I will be happy to share that with members of the committee. In the meantime, we have a vehicle that will help us do the synthesis if we want to do that.
That all makes sense, Mr. Chair. I was just curious how we figured out that it was one of the most polluted bodies of water in the nation, if nobody had studied it yet. So I think that was a federal determination, not a, so we might also try to tap in as we do this to all the federal data.
So what we have is a vehicle in case we need a placeholder. Any other comments? If not, we'll close the hearing. See you Thursday.
Mr. Chair, can I have a quick question?
Sure.
I'm a little bit confused. We have a memo here that we're having a Saturday meeting on the 24th, and I understood that perhaps that was on the 17th instead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, that was a memo that was passed out last Friday. Since that time, several of the members indicated that the 24th absolutely would not work, and that's why you see you have a new schedule that I gave to you and your staff that lays out the new delineation of how we're going to deal with the sections, including this Saturday meeting on the 17th.
But that raises an issue. Is there anyone here who cannot make it this Saturday? I know we've got one going to be absent.
I'm right. It's 5 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to play golf, but...
Is it too late to say that I had other things?
Too late.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fraley.
I think Representative Starr would make an excellent sub of the sub of the subcommittee as the committee of one to hear testimony if he wants to do that on the 24th. We can do that with just one member, remember?
We could get testimony in the town hall and bring it back to you.
Exactly. I'll take testimony.
Well,
I'm losing control of the committee.